as I'm sure you will.
Por favor, si van tomando asiento, podemos...
Just telling the photographers now to sit down so that we can commence the press conference. Siente.
Las preguntas.
So we can start quickly with the questions that people want to ask. Looks like in the third row on your left, behind all of those photographers, you have a, there will be a question asked in a moment. The man has his, there are people with a hand up and there will be a microphone. Okay, if we're ready, let's go. Hi, good morning. To your left, standing up. I want to thank you, Mr. Sutherland. Good morning to you. I want to thank you that some of the roles that you portrayed have made me understand life and myself much better. And you that have played Jesus Christ in Johnny Get His Gun or a middle tides man in Normal People, which one do you remember the most fun that you've had in a shoot? Where did you have the best fun? In what shoot or what film that you shoot that you had the best fun? Thank you very much.
Question. I cannot answer it. I'm sorry. It's like asking me which is my favorite child. I have five children. If I said one of them was my favorite, the other four would kill me. So, they're my children. And I love the directors that I worked with. Yeah, you're going to meet Giuseppe in a minute, who's wonderful. So I can't answer it. I mean, I don't have a favorite. I had huge relationships with them all.
Another question. Siguiente pregunta, por favor.
Next question, please.
Did they translate me for you?
Yeah, they are translating. Yeah.
We're translating for him all the time. Thank you.
But I really love working with Fellini.
Buenos días.
Hi, good morning. I would like to ask you, why did you choose to keep getting up early to go to a shoot when you could live off your off the rent, because you're a living legend in film, and whether the characters, enigmatic, ambiguous characters, mysterious characters you portrayed in Venice, for example, now that you've mentioned Fellini, could you also portray them here in San Sebastian at any time? What do you think of the city, and would you ever do a film here? What did you think? What do you think?
But I've been in San Sebastian for 2 days. I love the ocean. I love the ocean rushing up into the city when the tide is high, coming up through that channel. It's very beautiful. I went yesterday to see Chilida, the sculptor. It was fantastic. It was a very beautiful day. I drove the day before to see the Getty Museum, and it was fantastic. So I've had a wonderful time here, and I know how to say à la salle de on, de nori. Mila Esker, Donastia, that's it. About making a film here, if someone offered me a film, I would be happy to make a film here. And you asked me, why didn't I, I don't have a lot of money to do that, and I have a lot of people that I feed, primarily because my life is to work. The job of an actor is to work. The job of an actor is to look for his next job. You know? I love working. It's a passion. Those characters that I've played have given me a great deal of information and joy and freedom. They've lived a life that I would never have dared to live. So, I'm just wondering, Teresa, is that you outside on the telephone? I've never heard anyone speak so quickly in my life. She sounds like a machine gun, and she's actually talking. Was that you on the phone? Oh, God. Teresa, say something in Spanish to these people so that they can understand how quickly you speak. See what I mean? Okay, go further away from the door. So, did I answer anybody's question? This is a disaster. Speak.
It's a fantastic disaster. Don't worry. Aquí en la primera fila tenemos otra.
First row. Hi, good morning. Congratulations for the award. And I must say, it's a genuine honor to have someone who I've admired for so many, many years have you in front of me and in my city. My question is, when you started out, you could say there was a change in the way films were made in Hollywood. I would like to know, what were those years like in that change? And how you see the Hollywood nowadays, which we criticize that it's too anchored in one way of making films, especially in remakes or big super productions and superheroes or things of that nature. Thank you very much.
I'm just turning off my phone because I didn't want to be interrupted. You know, when I started out, I didn't ever intend to be anything but an actor in the theater. I got a job in television somewhere around 1960. I had worked for about 8 years in the theater. And nobody's quiet, are they? And so when I had the opportunity to work in a film, I had a wonderful time. But those were films where they were shot on celluloid. And they changed the magazine every 11 minutes. Now it's on digital. And they changed the, I don't know what you call it, the thing that they stick in. But anyway, they change it every 58 minutes, and sometimes they can leave it going on forever. So it's a different way of making a film. I love making films with Nick Rogue, with Robert Aldrich, with Fellini, but it's okay, no, it's all right, but it's different, and I'm not fully adjusted to it, and I probably won't ever be. But I made a little piece in a film for James Gray called Ad Astra, and it was a pleasure. Actually, I think they shot it on film. They did, I think, yeah. Anyway, okay. But about Hollywood, I don't know anything about Hollywood. I mean, I just work. And Hollywood's a society. It's wonderful. But it's an industry town. And I can't speak to it. I don't live there. I live in Canada and in Miami Beach, which is associated to the United States, but not really. And I live in France sometimes. But now I'm moving to San Sebastian.
Siguiente pregunta, por favor.
Next question, please. Hi, first of all, congratulations. Please stand up so that, can you see him? Okay.
Stand up.
Okay.
No. When you stand up, it's quite threatening. So sit.
Ah, bueno.
Yeah.
Let's repeat. Okay. First of all, congratulations. Sorionak in Basque. Sorionak. The question is, before doing dramatic art, you studied music and you were an engineering.
No. Study music.
Creo que ingeniería, ¿no?
¿Ah?
Para
engineering, yes. Did you study engineering?
I was 17 in Nova Scotia. And my father said, what are you going to do? And I said, I want to be an actor. We had never seen the theater. We had never been in a theater. We had seen movies. And my father said, okay. Okay, I love my father and my father loved me. And because I said I wanted to be an actor, and because I wanted to be an actor, not from any outside influence, but because it was a deep-seated need inside me. And he said, okay, but you're going to go to university. I said, yes, because there's a theater in Toronto that I would like to work in, because one of my teachers had told me about it. And he said, well, then you should get something that you can fall back on when this doesn't work out. And he said, you should study engineering. And I was good at math. I was good at differential equations and force equals ma, you can't push a rope, that kind of thing. So that's how it came about. But I failed engineering. I was not good. They said if I wanted to be a modern artist, I should repeat my differential equations. So I'm an actor.
Entonces, nunca he lamentado.
So you've never regretted leaving engineering and whatever else, and haven't taken the road of dramatic art.
I never intended to be an engineer. Engineering was just a delivery system to allow me to be an actor.
Tenemos por aquí una siguiente pregunta.
Yes, another question. Hi. First of all, congratulations for the award. And I'd like to ask you, because there are two films that I've liked very much. One is Kelly's Heroes, which I remember that I saw when I was a kid with my father, when we laughed quite a lot. And I would like to know whether you've got any anecdotes or a good anecdote about that film in general. And the other is the character of Snoke in Hunger Games, because of my age, is one of the series that I've seen the most, because it's been a phenomenon. And how do you remember the phenomenon of the saga of the Hunger Games, or Games of Hunger, after the, because it's a few years have gone by since the premiere of the last film, okay?
We shot Kelly's Heroes in 1968 in what was then Yugoslavia. And I had shot the film MASH, but it had not been released yet. The director was a fellow named Brian Hutton, who was terrific. I had a 6-week hiatus in my contract, and I came to shoot the first day, and then I had 6 weeks off, and I'm a Canadian, so I was going to go across the border to Leningrad, it was called then, and go to the Hermitage Museum. So I finished the first day's shooting. I came and I was playing poker. I'd had a swim in the Danube about 5 days before. And I was playing poker that night, and I couldn't get up. I'd play a hand, and then I'd go and lie down under the table. And then I'd get up for the next hand. And finally, the fellow who worked with me picked me up and walked me into the hospital. They put me in a room. They did a spinal tap. They, in fact, did 7 of them. And I had spinal meningitis, bacterial spinal meningitis. And they did not have the drugs to treat it. But I did not want to die, but I was in a coma, And I had that outer body experience where you're up here over your right shoulder, looking down and watching your body just go down this tunnel, this blue tunnel. But I grabbed on, or I thought I grabbed on, to the bed and forced myself to live. And I was lying still in a coma in my bed in the hospital, and I could hear. So if you're ever with anyone who's in a coma, talk to them. They can hear you. And I could hear the producer and two of his financial partners dictating in my room, dictating a telegram to my then wife, telling her not to come, that they would ship the body home. But I didn't die. They sent me to Charing Cross Hospital in London to give you an idea of what it was like then. The ambulance from the hospital to the airport where the British Airways plane was ready to put me in the back seats lying down. The ambulance ran out of gas on the way to the airport. But I spent 6 weeks in the hospital, and I was on the way to recovery. I wasn't recovered, but I was on the way. And they called me back, and I came back to work. They never used that little scene we shot on the first day. But when I got back, Brian Hutton came up and he said, get yourself comfortable, go up and have a sleep. And I went up to my room and I was alone. And I went to sleep and I went into that deep sleep and it was like I was dying. And I came rushing awake and I've never been back there since. Which is why I look so tired today. I just played the character, and Brian would say after each take, "That was terrific," and I would say, "Are you sure?" and start to cry. My brain was absolutely fried. Spinal meningitis means that your meninge gets swollen, it presses on your brain, and you're a freak. So that was that movie. And in the middle of it, the telegram came that MASH had been screened in a theater in San Francisco, and it had become all the rage. As for the Hunger Games, I was only in and out of it. And I had a huge affection for Coriolana Snow. But my even greater affection was for Jennifer. She is a genius of an actor. She's just brilliant. I had not thought I would be in that movie. In fact, I thought when my agents used to send me scripts because often I was not offered things, but they liked to read what I thought of them, thought of the scripts, and they send me scripts and say, "What do you think of this one?" And I thought it was a possibility that it could energize the youth of the United States and politicize them, revolutionize them maybe. Anyway, get their asses out of the chairs. It didn't, but it had a shot at doing it. And I had thought it was going to be animated. I never thought that they could have done that original script. But they did, and that was primarily because of Jennifer. And they cast me, Gary cast me in it because of the letter I wrote back detailing what I thought of the script. Hang on 1 second. Can somebody go out and tell them to move far away? Because I hear people talking out there, and it pisses me off. which is English for annoys me. But they're babbling away.
Una pregunta más por aquí, por favor.
Another question over here, please. ¿Dónde estás? Hi, over here. Ah, congratulations to the Donostia Wall. I would like to change tack, and I'd like to ask you, how do you know Canada is a long way away from the Mediterranean, and it's a Mediterranean. The Palestinians and the Syrians have been. Don't you see? I'm sorry. We've asked you to ask questions about the professional career of the Donostia Award. Well, he was starting to ask you about the fact that Canada is a long way away from the Mediterranean, and they're accepting Syrian refugees, etc. Don't you see? Refugees are. Don't you see that the refugees are affected by the politicians here in Europe, and that's how their lives are affected by them? What do you think about that?
Well, I didn't understand the question.
No he entendido la pregunta muy bien. Well, how do you?
Canada accepts refugees.
That's what he was referring to, that the Canada does.
You know, my great-great-great-great-grandparents were refugees. They accept them. I think they're pretty specific Canadians about the background you have to have as a refugee to come in. You have to qualify. I know that. But they're incredibly happy with the refugees that have come in. But I don't know anything else. I couldn't understand the nature of the question. And I think maybe it was the translation. You know, I don't think it has to do with you. I don't know. But if you want to come to Canada, we'd be very glad for you to come. Yeah, speak.
Just.
Yeah, give it to him, please.
Perdóname.
No, sorry. The question is, how your opinion about the attitude of European politicians vis-a-vis the refugees? That was the question, very clearly.
No, I don't have an opinion about that. But I have an opinion about Brexit.
En el fondo tenemos a un joven que quería hacer una.
About climate change. You know something? The Chinese are now using people, individuals, to pollinate their flowers and their apple trees because they do it individually. There are no more bees.
Última
pregunta. If you drive in your car, there are no more bugs on your windscreen. We've lost 2.5 billion birds. There are no robins on my lawn this year. That's what we should be talking about. I know absolutely the refugee situation is something that is desperate. I mean, the refugee system at the southern border of the United States is ludicrous. But the only thing I can address as an opinion is my opinion of climate change. Because I have children, I have grandchildren, and the world that I have left them, or I'm going to leave them, is not one that they're going to be able to live in. Anyway.
One quick.
No, I'm serious, I'm really serious. The attitude at the United Nations is bullshit.
Vamos a recibir con un fuerte aplauso.
If you don't understand the translation of bullshit, I can give you another word.
No tenemos mucho tiempo.
We don't have much time. They have a very tight agenda. And I want to remind you that we've been able to see the film, The Burnt Orange Heresy, within the special Donosti Award, and that's what was premiered this morning. So we're going to have his director here. So let's give a round of applause for Giuseppe Capotolde, who's going to come into the press conference now.
Hi, Giuseppe.
Hi.
I really screwed this one up.
Oh, thank you. Good start. Oh.
No, I didn't. I wasn't able to answer any question adequately. And then I shot my mouth off.
Oh, well,
let's take advantage to ask questions about the film now, okay? If such is the case, it's about the film.
Impossible.
Okay, tenemos aquí en la segunda fila.
Question in the second row there. Microphone, please.
Hi, I'm here. So congratulations on the film. And the main conclusion that I've drawn from the movie is that when it comes to art, you can pretty much fool the whole world into thinking something worthless is actually a masterpiece. I wanted to know if that is actually your opinion on art, and if you think the other way around could happen as well. Could you fool people into thinking something that is actually great is worthless? And I would like to know both your opinions, actually, if possible.
Well, it's something that we see happening every day, isn't it? I mean, people trying to sell us lies and make us believe that's the truth. We see it everywhere, you know, in politics and finance. So you can definitely create alternate truth very easily. And maybe that's the little message of this film. More? Do you want to say something?
No, I'm not going to say anything. No, you talk. I talked a lot.
I mean, you know, it's this film is not really about art. I mean, it's just an excuse. Obviously, it's, you know, when you talk about art, it has its own mystique, you know, and it's beautiful to talk about art. But it could be translated everywhere, you know. The art critic could be somebody working in politics or somebody working in finance. It doesn't really make much difference. I mean, the concept is if you have power or money, and power and money, you can actually fabricate a new truth.
Yes, I'd like to ask Mr. Sutherland whether in this shooting of this film of The Burnt Orange Heresy, is there any juicy anecdote like you told us a moment ago? I imagine not. But were there any anecdotes in the shoots? And all of these anecdotes that you've told us, excuse me for being ignorant, but are they in any book? Have you written your memoirs? Can that be read, everything that you just experienced and lived in filmmaking in such a brilliant career that you've had so far? Is that anywhere written in a book, everything that you've told us so far and those anecdotes?
I forget.
No. No. What? No, I have... No, Giuseppe knows them.
No.
La primera vez que no, la
in the room, I was trying to be as smart as and impress you with something philosophical, like, like, you know, do you really think is the you know, duty of an artist to, you know, show his art to the public? And you were like, well, you look at me with those piercing blue eyes for a couple of seconds, but it looked like it was like 5 minutes, and I was sweating, I remember. And you said, Debney's 85, he can do whatever he wants. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, that's the best anecdote, I think.
Hello, and congratulations for the film.
Oh, thank you.
It very much. I wanted to ask a question because at the end of the film, some people were speaking and said that they didn't understand why Mrs. Hollis goes back to the apartment. Huh? And to me, it has a clear explanation. I would like to know if that is I think she wants to fool herself and think that love is real, as much as Cassidy or Figueres want to believe the masterpiece is real. Is it a proper explanation?
It is. Also, we have to... I don't think... I don't know. We tend to, or we want to believe that people act in a reasonable way all the time. But it's not true. I mean, our lives are governed, is governed more by feelings and passions and fears, and not by reason. And in that special occasion, I think, first of all, she's, you know, in shock and, you know, lack of oxygen and whatever. She doesn't think straight. But also, I mean, I don't want to say things that I don't know, but why do women go back to their abusive husbands or, you know, partners all the time, and then they get killed at the end? Because they are trying to change them, possibly, or I don't know, or there are no other, you know, places to go, maybe. So, yeah, I think she didn't have any other place to go, and she had to go back up.
But also there's the, what is it called, the Swedish syndrome?
The Stockholm syndrome?
Stockholm syndrome. Yeah. That's in Sweden. But it's a curious situation that affects your mentality. You can't believe where you are.
Yeah,
you can't believe what's happened to you, even though you know it's happened. And there's that disbelief guides you in the strangest way.
It does, totally. And also there's this the nurse syndrome as well. Mm-hmm. You know, the nurse syndrome. You want to change somebody that you care of. And also, I mean, even intelligent people like Berenice, she can make the wrong choice. Yeah. It's funny. I mean, it's a film noir, basically. And you know, in film noirs, reasonable people do unreasonable things all the time. So I think it works for me, at least. Or even for Elizabeth. I mean, I don't want to talk for her because she's not here, but when we talked about
Let's talk for her.
Yeah.
She's wonderful.
She's wonderful.
And taller than me. True.
Yeah.
Very impressive.
Hola, buenas.
Hi. I have a question for the director as well as for Donald as regards to what you most were interested in the concept of this film. What was the most important concept behind this film in order to be able to put it on the screen? What drove you to put it on the screen, I think he's meaning.
No, I didn't put it on the screen. You did. It's your fault.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think the core theme is the truth. How really easy it is to fabricate a new one and sell it as the real thing. Maybe for me that was one of the main things from the script, which was beautiful. I mean, the script, the dialogues are so beautifully crafted, I think. But then again, I mean, we shouldn't take this film too seriously. I mean, it's just film noir. We tried and, you know, put some irony in it and to make it playful. It's a thriller, it's a genre movie. We should just enjoy it. And then if you want to take home a little message, you know, that you can think about it when you brush your teeth before going to bed, you know, for 2 minutes, is that it's very easy to fabricate a lie and sell it as, you know, the real thing.
Tan solo tenemos tiempo para una.
We've only got time for one more question, so please.
Hello. Here. Right here. I'm actually from Miami, so I totally understand. It's a beautiful Hispanic melting pot. So
I didn't mean it was an Hispanic melting pot. I mean that Miami, South Florida, which is where I live.
Correct.
It's a separate state. Really should be an island off the coast that has a relationship with the United States, and maybe not. But I mean, it's a wonderful place to be.
It is indeed. I was wondering, how was the collaboration, the process between you two? And I was wondering, Mr. Sutherland, how you choose, when you decide to make a movie, you choose the, sometimes they say, they choose me or I choose the character. How is that process?
I don't know. I mean, because it's different every single time. It has to do with love. You fall in love. You read the script. I've sent my agent, once again, a letter, saying, because I was not offered the role. It had gone already to someone else, I think. But he sent me the script because he thought I would like to read it. And I read it, and I loved it. I thought it was wonderful. I thought, in fact, I was probably too old to play the character, because he was thought of as a younger person initially, but I fell in love with him. I fell in love with his words, with his thoughts, with his relationship with women. He amused me greatly, and he had more strength, more force than I do as an individual, but he pushed me, you know. I was glad that Giuseppe cast me, very.
It's been a great honor, a big pleasure. Thank you very much. Thank you. Muchísimas gracias.